You've probably heard me talk about my dog, Jackson. He's my baby boy. And as he's gotten older, he's gotten really finicky about eating. He used to get so excited about food, he'd literally spin. Well, not anymore. In fact, I often have to spoon feed him to get him to eat. Well, no more. Not since we started feeding him fresh food made with whole ingredients, backed by veterinary science. It's Nom Nom. Now, I actually tried making food for him myself. I'd cook up big batches of chicken or beef with vegetables and rice or potatoes, but without knowing what I was doing, he wasn't getting the vitamins and minerals he needed, and certainly not in the correct balance. That's all changed now with Nom Nom. Go to trynom.com, trynom.com/sentbynicole. They'll ask you some questions about your pup and tailor a specific amount of individually packaged Nom Nom meals and send them to you. By using my special URL, trynom.com/sentbynicole, you'll get 50% off of your first order, plus free shipping, and it's a great way to help support this show, too. Again, that's trynom.com/sentbynicole. Plus, Nom Nom comes with a money-back guarantee. If your dog's tail isn't wagging within 30 days, Nom Nom will refund your first order. No fillers, no nonsense, just Nom Nom.
The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Okay.
Rock, rock, rockin' Nicole. Oh, once she grabs, she won't let go. Rock, rock, rockin' Nicole. Rock, rock, rockin' Nicole.
None of that soft stuff.
Rock, rock.
None of that heavy metal stuff.
Rock, rock, rock,
just a little bit of jazz.
Rock, rock, rock and Nicole.
Just I like love that.
That was great.
There's a governor known for his mean attacks. Likes to yell at children for wearing masks. Anti-truth, anti-facts, and of course anti-vax. He's a small man after all. Ron DeSantis picked a brawl with fun drag queens, but we recall he wears go-go boots, so he looks tall. He's a small man after all. He passed a hateful law known as Don't Say Gay, made AP African American Studies go away. He's attacking trans kids, so his base flips their lids. He's a mean man after all. Ron DeSantis, he grandstands, ignores his state for his national plans, but he eats pudding with his hands. He's an uncouth schmuck after all. Now about woke Disney, he's whined and bitched, but neglects to say that's where he got hitched. Disney's winning this fight because the schmuck isn't bright. He's a dumb man after all.
Sing it!
Ron DeSantis, what a louse. Human rights he tries to douse. Picked a fight with Mickey Mouse, which was not a real smart call. Yeah, he's a dumb, mean bigot, a hate-filled spigot, and a boorish, petulant small man who's clearly compensating for something after all.
You tell him, Lauren Mayer.
Before you go, one quick favor. If you're enjoying these videos, I hope you consider supporting me through my Patreon. There's at least $2 a month. That way you can enjoy me after we get to the hard work every week to keep you back with the news that would otherwise make you cry. Thanks.
Thanks, Lauren Mayer, with a repeat performance. But, you know, I'm still on Ron DeSantis week because did you hear the latest? He is declaring his candidacy for the presidency tomorrow. And he's going to do it with Elon Musk on the Twitter Spaces. That's like the old-fashioned party line. I know I'm dating myself, but I'm old. Party lines were before my time, actually. It's when, you know, you would have a phone, but you shared it with other households. So at any time, you could pick up the phone and get in the middle of someone else's conversation, and people did that all the time. It's a party line. That's what Twitter Spaces is. It's just disembodied voices. just in case you were wondering. So tomorrow, I guess, Ron DeSantis is going to declare his candidacy for the presidency of the United States on Twitter Spaces with Elmo. All right. Yeah, more power to him. But not really. But I got to share this with you because let's see if I can get this shot together. So, you know, we've seen Ron DeSantis in one, count him, one debate. And my God, was he awful. I mean, he's just terrible. The man has the personality of a wet rag. And that's being insulting to the wet rag. So, but when he ran for governor, you know what? I don't even know if there was a debate the first time he ran against Andrew. Now I'm drawing a blank on his name. The guy he defeated, who he shouldn't have, who, by the way, was just cleared by a jury. Ron DeSantis has a habit of going after his political enemies. Andrew, God, why am I drawing a blank? Anyway, oh, I'm sorry, Albert. Albert's in the chat room, said he's leaving. All right, said he'll listen to the podcast. Podcast is free. It's not behind a paywall. Okay, so anyway, I don't know if there was a debate at all in the first governor's race of DeSantis's, but when he ran against Charlie Crist just last year, there was Andrew Gillum. Yes, Andrew Gillum. Yes, David, Gillum.
He definitely debated Gillum, and Gillum came up with a great line because DeSantis was trying to deny that he was a racist. Uh-huh. And that was when Gillum said, "You might say that you're not a racist, but all the racists
will say
think
that
you are
a
racist."
Right, right. I remember that now that you say it. Well, I didn't pull anything. Maybe tomorrow I'll pull a clip from that first DeSantis Gillum. Yes, Gillum. It's sad what happened to Andrew Gillum. And I'm not even going to go there. All I know is that he was cleared by a jury and he's a free man. And he's, you know, he was found not guilty of the charges they levied against him. Anyway, in the debate with Charlie Crist, Ron DeSantis showed that he has no skills whatsoever. And Charlie Crist tried to pin DeSantis down and ask him, well, if you win, are you going to serve out the 4 years of the term or are you going to run for president? Now, if you're watching one of the video streams, and we stream on YouTube, Facebook Live, Twitter, and Twitch, so you can watch. And I also post one of the videos, usually the YouTube video, on the page where I post the audio podcast on my blog at NicoleSandler.com, followed by the date. So today would be at NicoleSandler.com/5-23-23. Got the format? So you can watch it. You can go back later and watch it if you want. But the look on DeSantis's face is, well, I was going to say priceless, although it's pathetic, really. He's like the proverbial deer in headlights. He doesn't, and listen, because he says Crist asks him the question and DeSantis just stands there and then he goes, "Is it my turn? Is it my turn?" And if you're not listening for it, you might miss it. And it's too good to miss. So here we go from the Crist DeSantis debate. I think. Come on.
I have a question for you. You're running for governor. Why don't you look in the eyes of the people of the state of Florida and say to them, if you're reelected, you will serve a full 4-year term as governor. Yes or no?
Yes or no?
Yes or no, Ron? Will you serve a full 4-year term if you're reelected governor of Florida? It's not a tough question.
It's my time. Is it my time?
It's a fair question. He won't tell you.
He won't answer. He just stands there. They were not allowed to ask each other questions. My time? Is it my time? Ugh. That's Ron DeSantis. Now, he's a bad man. What is he, Bill Mumy? He's a what?
You're a bad man! You're a very bad man. Yeah,
that he is. Oh, sorry. Let me get this picture off the screen. He is a bad man. He's a very bad man. And yes, Chris in the chat room said he literally looks like he has no idea what he's doing. I don't get it. So he doesn't know what he's doing. He is. Look, you know, I hate to give Donald Trump any due, but if Donald Trump hadn't backed him, hadn't propelled him in his race against Andrew Gillum, he'd still be a backbencher in Congress. You know, he was a two-term congressman from the Florida Panhandle, which is lower Alabama, to give you an example, right? And he was a nothing. And in fact, you know, nobody ever heard of him before. He was the dictionary definition of a backbencher. And, you know, Trump plucked him from obscurity and backed him. And that's the only reason he got the nomination. It was that, you know, there's always a hierarchy. You're right. People work their way up the ladder, as it were. And there was a guy named Adam Putnam, who was a Republican. You know, he was the agriculture secretary, like Nikki Fried was, you know, for the Democrats. And he worked his way up and he was next in line. And he would have been the Republican nominee if DeSantis hadn't jumped in with the help of Donald Trump. But DeSantis, being the, you know, the piece of shit he is, of course, he turned on Trump, and now he's trying to act like, oh, I'll be better. Did you hear his latest? It was something along the lines of, well, because he talks kind of like this and a little bit nasally, he's up here. Well, you know, if I win, I can serve two terms, but Donald Trump can only serve one. Yeah, Ron, but you see, that argument works for just about for every other Republican running in the race. So you got Tim Scott, you got Nikki Haley, you got, who else is running? You know, Asa Hutchinson, Chris Christie's going to jump in again. You know, there will be a wide range of people who are afraid to challenge Donald Trump, but technically they're challenging Donald Trump. Ay, ay, ay. All right, so we do have a guest today, and I was a little mistaken yesterday when I told you, because I got the articles that I was looking at confused. But yes, I've been reading a lot about the unlikely governor of the state of Florida, and all the damage that he's done and is inflicting on people. And one of the most, you know, egregious things that he is guilty of is, it's hard to narrow it down, but because there are so many. But I got to show you this video that I found. I saw it on, I think on Twitter. I do not know. Now, it was a video originally posted on TikTok. Now, I don't do TikTok, but if you're a TikToker and would help me out, I would like your help. I want to find the person who uploaded this video. And when I put it up on the screen, you'll see it, because you'll see the account the TikTok account that posted it. But basically, I know that it's a teacher in Florida, in a Florida school, and she is showing us the massive bins of books that were removed from her school in these fascist Florida book banning things. And what it is these moms, I guess, the Moms of Liberty or whatever ridiculous name they gave themselves, who filed complaints. And the more we hear about it, the scarier it is. But let me share this video with you. Again, this is a video. All they tell us in the video is that this is a teacher in a Florida school, though I don't know what county. I don't even know her name. So I'm hoping some of you sleuths who listen to the show, who are watching the video, who are also on TikTok will find this woman for me because I'd really like to talk to her. So here's the video she posted. And yes, I'll narrate.
This is a quick video. I'm at my school right now. I just want to show you something because the state just came last week and decided what books were appropriate or inappropriate. So I'm going to figure out how to show you.
Inappropriate.
This is a book that's been deemed
hate
inappropriate.
It's called
These
hate
are the
groups.
Boxes of books waiting to go out. Look how big this box is.
Wow.
I'll show you some of the titles.
And that's just one. These are giant bins. Black yep. Eagles.
We have 20th Century Writers. We have Rosemary in the Woods. American. The Haunted.
Hispanic Americans. Pocahontas.
The Big Lie.
About the Holocaust.
Right, it's all about Judaism.
It's not the Trump Big Lie.
Women
it's the
of
Holocaust
Nigeria,
Big Lie.
Hitler.
Book
El
about
Salvador.
Hitler. El Salvador.
These are just a few of the books.
There are one, two, three. There's got to be at least
inappropriate.
Six
Lewis
of these
Clark.
Giant bins.
They're removing these books from our library.
That they're removing from the library
Jefferson
in
Republic.
One school.
I don't understand.
This is in one school.
Writers.
The Encyclopedia of Mammals.
Groups.
Oh my God! And then there's
so,
one, two, three,
yeah,
four
this is,
more.
This is what's going
Five.
On.
That is astounding. So the name. On that, hold on. I'm gonna give you the name on this Twitter account because it's up here on the video. It's I wrote it down, didn't I? Because I was being smart. P S Y C H I E A. Yep, Psychia. P S Y C H I E A. That is the name of the TikTok account. So if anybody's on TikTok, any of you guys listening are on TikTok and you can find that teacher for me, I want to talk to her. I want to know where this school is. All it tells us, it's in Florida. But yes, the Encyclopedia of Living Things, Mammals, a book, The Big Lie about the Holocaust. It's astounding to me. Hispanic America, Texas, and the Mexican War. 1835 to 1850, that was removed from a Florida school, and all those books came out of one school. This is what Ron DeSantis is. So in just a couple of minutes, I'm going to be joined by a woman who's an author. Hold on, I got to pull up my notes. And I found her because she wrote an article that's in Salon this month, salon.com, and it's called The Battle Against Fascism in Florida, Lessons on How to Beat Back Authoritarianism from Abroad. And she makes no secret of it. What Ron DeSantis is doing is bringing fascism to Florida. He talks about the free state of Florida. No, it is the fascist state of Florida. So we'll be joined by Maria J. Stephan in just a couple of minutes. But let me take a moment to tell you about our latest, newest sponsor. They are BetterHelp. Now, I'm someone who has suffered from depression since adolescence. That's a long time. And I've been in and out of therapy. I've tried just about everything. I have what's known as drug-resistant depression, but that's a story for another day. But talk therapy is always a welcome help, and that's what it is. It's help. Sometimes you just need an objective person to be able to talk to. But it is harder and harder to find a good therapist near you. So when BetterHelp approached me and said, you know, they wanted to sponsor the show, I was excited, but of course I don't recommend anything unless I try it myself. So I had my second appointment with my therapist through BetterHelp yesterday, and it was great. When you sign up, you go to BetterHelp.com/Nicole Sandler. That way they know I sent you. And if you decide to sign up for something, they'll give you a 10% break on your first month. But just go check out the site, read everything. They'll give you a short questionnaire that you fill out And that's how they match you with a therapist. Now, you can change therapists. You can keep going until you find the right person for you. I'm kind of picky. I'm not an easy person to please. And yet the first therapist they matched me with, I really like. So I had my second appointment with her yesterday. And I'll keep you posted, let you know how it's going. But so far, so good. So what are you waiting for? Visit BetterHelp.com/Nicole Sandler today. You get 10% off your first month. And, you know, just check it out. Information is power. BetterHelp, BetterHelp.com/Nicole Sandler. All right. Like I said, in just a couple of minutes, we're going to be joined by Maria J. Stephan. She co-leads a group called the Horizons Project, and she's the co-author of a book called Why Civil Resistance Works. Now, in this article, you know, she doesn't live in Florida, but it's interesting. I found a lot of quite a few articles from people who are not down here finally starting to see the light about Ron DeSantis. And the fact that he is a fascist. The situation at the New College, which I mentioned yesterday, I will actually share X Gonzalez's article in The Atlantic tomorrow because it's rather lengthy. And excuse me, I just don't have time today because Marie is going to be joining us any moment, I think. And or maybe I'll share it with you in a little while. We'll see. But what DeSantis is doing to public education in Florida is just one of many of the authoritarian fascist kind of moves that he is imposing on the citizens of Florida. So let me read to you the beginning, just the beginning of her article in Salon. By the way, the subtitle says, "The situation in Florida clearly represents a threat to American democracy." You think? So the other thing I like about this article, by the way, is at the end, she gives us solutions. She tells us things that we can do to help stop it, because we got to stop it, right? So her article begins, "Florida has become the epicenter of a struggle between authoritarianism and those committed to freedom and justice for all. Republican Governor Ron DeSantis has cast doubt on the legitimacy of the 2020 election, actively campaigned for election deniers, embraced divide and rule politics, and enacted extreme policies that gut fundamental freedoms enshrined in Florida's and the U.S. Constitution. These policies, grounded in racial resentment, misogyny, homophobia, and the punishment of opponents using state power, come straight from the global authoritarian playbook and are already spreading from Florida to other state legislatures across the country." She writes, "Attacks on fundamental rights and freedoms are only likely to accelerate should DeSantis's clear 2024 presidential ambitions be realized." All right, now I'm starting to wonder where she is, because she should have been in the chat room by now. So, and there she is. Okay, so, but she says Floridians are not sitting idly by, and she's talking about some actions that they're taking to fight back. And I'm glad to hear about it, because my experience here in Florida is kind of apathetic. I used to ascribe it to the weather, like that it's not the heat, it's the humidity, because it turns your brain to mush. And people down here really don't show up for protests. They don't come out for marches. They're very, very apathetic. But maybe Maria knows something I don't. So Maria Stephan, welcome to the program. She is the a co-director, as I told you before, of an organization called, as I pull it out again, The Horizons Project, and we'll get into that in a bit, and co-author of the book, Why Civil Resistance Works, and again, wrote this piece that was in Salon.com just last week, The Battle Against Fascism in Florida, Lessons on How to Beat Back Authoritarianism from Abroad. So Maria, thank you so much for joining us today. Oh, and I do not hear you. All right, so I got to figure out why. I have a new computer set up here. And sure enough, of course, something had to not work right. But it looks like I should hear you. Hold on, audio settings. Why do I have no audio from you? Okay. Oh, I know. I'm going to try one other thing. I think I know what it might be. Bear with me, and I'm so sorry. You know, it's my gremlins. They make a regular visit here to the show. But let's see. Zoom. No, it's saying that Zoom is working. Hold on. Let me try one other thing. Output. Let's try this. And let's try this. Okay, now try talking to me. No. Oh. No, try again.
Testing 1, 2, 3.
Yes, I have you. Yay! Okay, there you are. See, sometimes just a little bit of massaging. So let's start again. Maria J. Stephan, thank you so much for joining us today. So this article, what made you write this article for Salon?
Well, you know, I've been closely following what's been happening in Florida, and kind of as someone who's studied authoritarianism and kind of the authoritarian playbook and how it's been executed around the world, I was just struck by how closely DeSantis and his, you know, and his supporters have been adhering to the authoritarian playbook, and how systematic it's been. While at the same time, I've been very, you know, just impressed by the examples of organizing that that are happening across the state and the groups that are engaging in various forms of dissent, who are pushing back, who are forming coalitions. And so I wanted to write the article both to kind of situate what's happening in Florida in terms of wider global authoritarian trends, and to talk a little bit about kind of what authoritarianism looks like, and the pillars of support that are upholding it in Florida, and why, like, this authoritarianism is not contained to Florida. Of course, you know, so much of the legislation and the bills and the policies are being passed by state legislatures across the country. So it's not contained to Florida, of course. And then knowing that Governor DeSantis was likely going to announce his candidacy for the presidency, I wanted to just write a piece that laid out kind of what he was doing, why it was dangerous, and how people could fight back.
And I appreciate that. Now, you say daily walkouts, sit-ins, marches, and teach-ins led by students, teachers, parents, and other civic groups are happening daily across the state. I'm glad you're seeing them, because I'm certainly not. Now, you're in Vermont, right?
No, I was born and raised in Vermont. I'm calling you from New York.
Ah, okay. Oh, so I just looked at your area, the area code of your organization. I'm guessing you all work remotely then.
Yes, very true.
I gotcha. Okay, everything's different now. I forgot. You can't just go by the area code on the phone number. Are you hearing reports? I get that when you say students, I'm hoping that at universities all around the state, they are having walkouts and protests. And I know you know what's going on at the new college in Sarasota. I have to say it's criminal, or it should be, what they're doing to these kids.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And I think, you know, that's why you're seeing students, you know, young people, parents who are leading the walkouts, you know, who are like organizing and protesting in Tallahassee, who are forming caravans, who are leading sit-ins in Governor DeSantis' office at the end of the legislative session. So you're seeing a lot more action by students, young people, parents, because they're feeling the effects of these terrible policies. And so, and you know, sometimes the thing about The thing about movements is that you don't always see the organizing that's happening behind the scenes, and not everything is, you know, out in the streets protesting, sit-in. So those are actions that are certainly happening, but there's also a lot of quiet coalition building, you know, tables that are forming, groups that are trying to come together across issue areas. So those who are focused on LGBTQ issues, those who are focused on, you know, racism, that are focused on the attacks on education, that are focused on freedom of expression, that are focused on the book bans. So you're starting to see groups, you know, come together to coordinate, because they recognize that, you know, the threat is shared and they have to come together across issue areas to be able to forge an effective united front.
I get it. Now, so you, let's talk about your organization, the Horizon Project, because this is all tied in. So the website for the group is horizonproject.us. That's important. And so what do you do? Who are you guys?
So the Horizons Project is an organizing platform. We're a team of six folks in different parts of the country. And we're really, you know, we're seized with the reality of the authoritarian threat and the backsliding of democracy in this country. And we are organizing across different communities and constituencies. So those who focus on social justice, racial justice issues, so kind of the movement builders, those who are focused on democracy and democratic reform, those who are focused on bridge building and peace building. And we're helping to support these groups to be in, you know, in more regular communication, to coordinate, to build synergies in their work, because we believe that this type of cross, you know, cross community, cross partisan, cross ideological organizing is the strongest antidote to authoritarianism in this country.
It is. You know, I'm wondering how we get to this point. I mean, you know, that you always hear the common refrain, oh, it could never happen here. It can happen here. It's happening here. That's what so freaks me out. You know, on the side, because of everything that's going on, and I live in Florida, I'm starting a new podcast. You know, I'm doing the behind the scenes work because I need to get a few episodes done. But I'm reading The Handmaid's Tale. I'm reading it chapter by chapter. And of course, we'll have a little discussion with each part, because again, he can't happen here. Well, you know what? It happened in the 1930s and it's happening again. And the best way to ensure that it keeps happening is by us not doing anything, right? We need to stand up and say, hell no. That's why I worry about Florida. Because every time something goes on, you know, I'm in Broward County, which is the bluest part of the state. And even then, you know, when there's a protest, it's downtown Fort Lauderdale in front of the federal building. And we can go out there and carry signs and honk and wave. And it really, that's what they do down here. It's not enough. So I know at the end of your piece in Salon, which I will link to from the blog and I'll tweet out as well, you do have some ideas. What should we be doing?
Yeah. So, and can I just say that you're absolutely right about just the history of authoritarianism in this country. This isn't the first time, you know. The era of Donald Trump, you know, was kind of an amplification, an acceleration of, you know, an authoritarianism streak that exists in U.S. history. And, you know, people forget that at one point, the authoritarian faction was grounded in the Democratic Party after the Civil War, during Jim Crow. So, and now the authoritarian faction is anchored in the Republican Party. And that's, so when you have one of the two political parties dominated by, you know, an authoritarian kind of an autocratic faction, that is very dangerous and it's systemic. So in a way, it's not just about Ron DeSantis. It's not just about Donald Trump. It's a system and it's grounded in different institutions, which is why, in turning to your last question about recommendations, so you were mentioning that there are different protests that are happening. They don't seem big. So, you know, what I'm suggesting suggesting, based on everything I've been hearing from Florida organizers and activists, is that there needs to be a lot more focus and support for those on the front lines of the various struggles happening now in Florida, whether it's, you know, fighting against gun violence, you know, racial justice, whether it's for workers' rights. So supporting those on the front lines and then helping them to connect with one another. So invest in the connective kind of tissue between these different movements, because we, you know, to succeed, you need to go across issue silos. You need to be able to coordinate with each other and kind of build a united front. But then, of course, we know that movements don't succeed only by mobilizing people on the left or progressives. So movements need to be able to connect to, you know, people in the business community, to religious leaders and people of faith, to unions, to professional associations, to veterans, to military families. So these are groups with large constituencies, large infrastructure, resources. So when they start getting actively involved in a movement, that translates into a huge amount of power, and that's how you succeed.
Yeah, absolutely. And the other thing is, and I'm glad the, you know, that's the last part of this piece, and it's a lengthy piece. It's not a short, you know, it's a deep dive, and it's split into parts, and that's the final part. Before that, in the earlier parts of the article, you go into the history, and never before, I think, has it been more important to remind people that how important history is, because we need to learn from history, because if we don't, we keep repeating the same mistakes. And when you whitewash history and try to erase what happened, that can only be a horrible thing. I just played a video. Maybe I'll play it again so you can see it, because it's astounding. From a Florida school, although I'm hoping one of the sleuths in the audience will find out for me where in Florida this is, because this was a video I found on Twitter, but it was originally from TikTok, and I don't do TikTok. But Maria, I'm going to show you this. The listeners, it only runs like a little over a minute, but it's a Florida school, and a teacher is taking us through the hallways where they have these giant bins of books that have been removed from this one school alone. And when she said the state came in to, the state came in and took the books, I just found that really chilling. The state came in. All right. So here's the video. It's from TikTok. So it's right there in the middle of us. Here we go. Oops.
This is a quick video. I'm at my school right now. I just want to show you something, because the state just came last week and decided what books were appropriate or inappropriate. So I'm going to figure out how to show you.
Inappropriate.
This is a book that's been deemed inappropriate. These are the boxes of books.
Look at the boxes
waiting to go out. Look how big this box is. I'm going to show you some of the titles.
Show them this one too. Blacks and Aviation.
Yep.
Blacks and Aviation, Black Eagles.
We have 20th Century Writers. We have Rosemary in the Woods.
Hispanic America, Texas.
Pocahontas.
Pocahontas.
The Big Lie.
About the Holocaust. It's right, not about it's Trump's about Big Lie.
Judaism.
This is the Holocaust Big Lie.
Women of Nigeria. Hitler. El Salvador. These are just a few of the books that have been deemed inappropriate. Lewis and Clark, they're removing these books from our library. Jefferson
and look
Republic,
at how many, there are more boxes. There are like eight or nine of these giant, look down the hall, there's four or five more.
This is what's going on.
It's astounding. And banning books, that's a surefire sign of fascism, isn't it?
it's pretty close. We kind of know that history of, you know, what preceded Kristallnacht and, you know, full-blown Nazism in Germany was the burning of books. And so, yeah, it's frightening. But it's also, you know, one element. And I would just say, you know, PEN America is doing a remarkable job tracking book bans across the country. And, you know, eventually this is against progressive values. This is against conservative values. Like, it's completely anti-American. And, you know, one thing leads to another. And so once, you know, it becomes acceptable to ban books, then it becomes acceptable to ban all forms of speech. Then it becomes acceptable to use violence against people who, like, espouse certain ideas and beliefs. It's all, you know, it's kind of that very dangerous slope. And so, you know, but it's important to see the book bans in the context of other attacks on fundamental freedoms. So it's book bans, it's anti-protester bills, it's, you know, of course, the attacks on education, like, you know, New College, on reproductive freedoms, you know, so all of these things, it's the election denialism. So campaigning for big lie candidates. So all of these things are part of the authoritarian playbook of divide and rule, based on, you know, fear and scapegoating, and then, you know, erode democratic institutions and attack opponents to stay in power. Like, it's classic. And so, you know, the good thing about studying authoritarianism is you can see the patterns. And when you can see the patterns, then you can plan, you can organize, you can kind of, you know, figure out why we need to come together, because we're all facing these threats.
Right. We're speaking with Maria J. Stephan. She is a co-leader of the Horizons Project. They're at horizonsproject.us. She's the co-author of Why Civil Resistance Works. And how I found her is an article she wrote for Salon.com about a week and a half ago, The Battle Against Fascism in Florida, Lessons on How to Beat Back Authoritarianism from Abroad. What I don't get, Maria, is, it seems like brainwashing. All these people who you would think would know better, it's common sense. Oh my God, this is fascism. This is going down a really dangerous road. And yet they still back them up, whether it's the control over women's bodies, overturning Roe, banning of books, you know, in Florida, don't say gay. I mean, everything, every time you turn around, you mentioned the chilling effect against protesters. Ron DeSantis got a law through, and he signed, that if you are marching in the streets and you are blocking traffic, if you dare go off the sidewalk and onto the street, a car can run you over. It's almost like he's telling, like giving instructions. This is what you do with those lefties. And by the way, Antifa means anti-fascist. And the last time I looked, that's what World War II was about, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, for sure. I think there's a lot of focus on Antifa. I think that the groups that are actually organizing, though, and, you know, it's groups like students, it's parents, it's educators, it's, you know, faith leaders, it's business leaders. It's like, when these folks organize, this is what gives a movement power. And, you know, that's one of the kind of research findings in studying hundreds of cases of, you know, nonviolent pro-democracy movements around the world. The single most important variable to the success of these movements is mass diverse participation. So young and old, men and women, workers, professionals, all different types of people coming together and engaging in various forms of nonviolent action, from protests to walkouts, symbolic actions, consumer boycotts, labor strikes. There's a whole panoply of nonviolent actions that, you know, can be used by ordinary people and have been used by ordinary people in our country and around the world. And so that ability to bring in lots of different people, you don't win against authority authoritarianism through street fights. Like, that's not how you win. You organize, you bring people into a movement, you forge coalitions, you help prompt defections in those key pillars, those institutions that are providing the authoritarian system with moral and material support. That's how you win. And I think there's, a growing realization that that's what it's going to take to win in this country.
Right. But I go back to, we've got the Republican Party. I mean, a good portion of the population, and they are aligning themselves with authoritarian figures globally. Just look at the CPAC in Viktor Orban's Hungary. They've done two of them now, and they've brought Orban here. Last time I checked, wasn't Viktor Orban a dictator who doesn't believe in democracy? Why are they deifying him?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a fascination, amongst the GOP with authoritarian leaders from around the world. And there's a special fascination with Viktor Orban in Hungary. I think, because he's been able to manipulate institutions, mobilize people based on fear and hate to consolidate power. And that's how he's, been able to maintain power in Hungary. And so learning from these tactics, is definitely something that Republican leaders have been doing. And, again, just to make the point that, we're talking about Republican leaders doing this because today the authoritarian faction is anchored in the Republican Party. But when I'm talking about like the authoritarian threat and the need for a pro-democracy movement, this is not a partisan issue. This is not a Democrat versus Republican. This is like a democracy versus authoritarianism argument. And so it's like, we've got to, be aware of where these behaviors are taking place. And, we need a transpartisan movement. Like, we really need a transpartisan movement in this country for freedom and democracy. And so, and you were asking about why do people go along with this? Why do people go along with the tactics and, the attacks on LGBTQ and trans and the book bans? Well, autocratic leaders know how to tap into people's fears and insecurities and to create this us versus them dynamic. And so all that matters is our side winning and maintaining power in our identity. And so at a certain point, you start to ignore or even like support anti-democratic behavior as long as it's targeting the them, as long as it's targeting the other. So that's how good people can support like really, bad practices and bad politicians and bad movements. And I should say anti-democratic.
Oh, without a doubt. Now, the way they're able to do this, though, is, I think, through a series of misinformation or disinformation. The media, the history of the media and authoritarian regimes, I'm guessing, is all state-run. Basically, they control the message that goes out. I used to say, back in the early days before Fox was the all-powerful thing it became, that he who controls the media controls the message. And I used to point at Italy and say Berlusconi. He owned the media. He became president. It seems to hold true. And so what they did with Fox was build a propaganda outlet in the United States in the 20th century, 20th, 21st century. And it's astounding what they're able to get away with, partially because, and I've tried to explain this over the years, because Fox is a cable channel, it doesn't fall under the jurisdiction of the FCC, which only governed over the air broadcast, the public airwaves. Well, cable is not perceived as the public airwaves because it's cable. And so the FCC didn't have any power over them. Fox couldn't do what they do on their cable channel, Fox, quote, News, on their over-the-air television stations because they have regulations that say if it's news, it has to be news. You can't make shit up and call it news. But on cable, they can. And that's what they do. And they've got this captive audience that they lie to. And as we've learned through the Dominion filings, they lied to them because they were giving them what they wanted to hear, thinking that, well, if we tell them the truth, they're going to go away and they'll go to someone else, Newsmax, OAN, or whoever, that will tell them what they want to hear. So it's like they created this monster and now they have to keep feeding it. Meanwhile, you've got a big portion of the American public who's been lied to, who believes what they've been told is news. They believe it's the truth because they've got people on TV telling them this is news and it's true, even though they're lies. This is out of the authoritarian handbook, isn't it?
No, for sure. I mean, and thank you for that helpful background. Yeah, I mean, media is a key pillar of support for authoritarianism. And, you know, it's no secret that autocratic leaders, like, usually their first move is to try to either censor or control the media, you know, through co-optation, through punishment. So they use various means. And yes, I mean, I think, you know, in to a large extent, Fox News has emerged as an amplifier of conspiracy theories and propaganda. And it's certainly been a tool, you know, that these leaders have used. And, you know, that's definitely part of the authoritarian playbook of, like, you don't need people to believe lies. Like, they don't need to understand. They just need to question the validity of truth. Like, you just need to, like, not believe that, like, you know, that a truth exists. And then if you don't believe that truth exists, then you believe the autocratic leader who says they know the truth and they'll teach you the truth, kind of thing. So, yeah, I mean, the very rapid spread of lies, conspiracies related to the outcome of the election, you know, for me, most troubling, like equally troubling, is, you know, just the rapid mainstreaming of the kind of great replacement theory, the idea that white folks are out to, you know, that people of color, black and brown folks, are out to strip whites of their power and identity, and that this is, like, you know, a strategy of the left. Like, that's very dangerous. Like, it has, you know, violent repercussions. And so, you know, conspiracies have consequences, as we saw on January 6th, as we've seen on attacks on, you know, vulnerable marginalized communities. So when the media is amplifying that is, you know, a very, very dangerous thing.
You know, I came up with a term because I got so sick of listening to these people talking and saying things. I mean, on one hand, it's just projection. Everything they do, they're trying to say, is what the other side does, when in actuality they're doing it. But even worse than that, they just, well, like I had this made up years ago about Fox. Offered it to them for their imaging. They, you know, they never took me up on it.
Your original source for fake news. Fox News. We make shit up.
Now, I put that together years before Donald Trump ever used the term fake news, because what they do is fake news. But then there's another term that I coined for what this is that we're living in, and it's opposite world.
Everything you thought you knew, you never knew it all. Sideways is straight ahead. Facts no longer matter. Reality is now fiction. There's a signpost up ahead. Your next stop, opposite world.
You know, nothing makes sense. And I always say I'd like to have a good policy discussion, debate with like a reasonable conservative, reasonable Republican. They don't seem to exist anymore because they all double down on these lies, even though they know it's not the truth. Or they should know it's not the truth. I don't know if they've been brainwashed, or it's this, you know, big club. It's all about power rather than doing good for the people. It seems we are so dug in on our sides. And I don't understand how anyone could be on the other side, because it makes no sense at all.
Yeah, I mean, but, you know, I think there are absolutely reasonable conservatives and Republicans, including those who have been, you know, vociferously opposing Donald Trump, and even those who were Donald Trump supporters, who did the right thing when it came to the 2020 election and didn't go along with orders to try to overturn the results of the election. And so I think, you know, these folks absolutely exist, and, like, it is incumbent on progressive organizers to find them and to support them and to, you know, build coalition with them. Like, that's how we win. So I think it's so important to kind of expand the aperture of who is with us and who the we are, and really, you know, build relationships with people. And they may not be the likely suspects. They may not be known people, but there are people in churches and, you know, who are workers and, you know, folks who are in the business community who absolutely see the writing on the wall and they don't want to support it. And they just, you know, there needs to be some organization with these groups. They can't be assumed to be, you know, on the other side. They need to be organized.
Yeah. I mean, I see the Never Trumpers on MSNBC. I bemoan the fact that it's become the Never Trumper channel. Lots of Republicans hanging out there. And I shudder to think what's going to happen if we ever get rid of the Trump faction in the Republican Party and go back to, you know, regular Republicans. Is MSNBC all of a sudden going to be, you know, Fox Light? But I guess we'll worry about that when we get to it. Right now, it is important to take the allies where we can get them, because the fight is much larger than this. You do say in your piece in Salon, in part three, the pro-democracy movement, that there are a number of organizing, pro-democracy organizing groups and organizations across Florida. And I'm sure there are parallels in every state. We're just talking about Florida in this piece. You mention Equality Florida. You mention Florida Rising, Dream Defenders, the Alliance to Reclaim Our Schools, Families for Strong Public Schools. There's a whole bunch of them. Aside from reading in your article and maybe trying to find the local chapters near you, is there a central clearinghouse where people can find these groups that they can join in?
So that's a great question. I don't know if there's a central clearinghouse, but depending on the issue area, there are definitely networks of groups that are working on particular issues. So, you know, like the Alliance to Reclaim Our Schools has been helping to organize a number of different organizations and groups that are pushing back on the education bills and the attacks on K-12 and higher education. So there are networks around the LGBTQ issue, with Equality Florida being, you know, one key player. You know, there's Equal Ground, which is doing organizing of pastors and religious leaders. You know, so there are a number of key nodes. And so depending on, you know, the issue that you're really focused on, while appreciating that all these issues are connected, and, you know, we talked about the need for these issues and these groups to come together, but you can find kind of key nodes. And I try to offer, you know, some of them in the article.
Great. And I will, again, post a link on the blog where I post today's show, because this article is filled with great resources and I hope people read it and take advantage of it. Again, the, you know, down here in Florida, I say it, but it's true. It is very apathetic. And if you go to a Democratic club meeting, you see a bunch of people in their 70s and 80s. And the numbers are dwindling because, I hate to say it, they're dying out. We need to get young people involved. And they are involved. I think this new group, the Gen Zers, are, I think, give us better hope than I've had in a long time. And I think I'm considerably older than you are. Finally seeing a group of young people really stepping up, and I hope I'm not just imagining it. I hope it's real. I'm ready for them to take over, because they seem like they're ready to take over.
I think you're absolutely right. And, you know, that was definitely a source of inspiration. And for me in writing the piece was just seeing, you know, the young folks, the Gen Z folks stepping up, you know, doing creative forms of organizing. And, you know, you now have like the Student Power Network. You have a lot of like youth movement leaders who are starting to come together and find common cause and join their forces. So I think that's a very, very hopeful thing for organizing in the state.
Definitely. I worry about the Florida college campuses, because I can't imagine anybody with half a brain is going to want to come to school down here seeing what they're doing. And I can't imagine any kids coming out of Florida's public schools being accepted to, you know, to good schools around the country, because I think we're going to put out a lot of you know, brainwash kids, and they talk about the left indoctrinating or grooming the kids. No, it's not us at all. That's what they do, and there's the projection again. So this is all hands on deck time. So get involved in whatever way you can. Again, I'll post this article. It's at salon.com, and you can just go there and look for Maria J. Stephan or come to the blog and find it. But Maria, thank you so much for writing it, and thank you for joining us today. I really appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Nicole. It was fun speaking with you.
Awesome. So thank you. And keep in touch. If you're covering anything that we should know about, please shoot me an email and let's get it on the air. All right. You're doing great work. Thank you. All right. Maria J. Stephan. And again, check out horizonsproject.us. They've got some interesting stuff on their website as well. All right. With that, we've reached the end of another show, just about. If you may have noticed, I've been enjoying my smoothie of the day. And today, again, it is berry season. So I'm enjoying my favorites, blueberries and strawberries ground up in my BlendJet 2 with a little bit of water, a little bit of vanilla protein powder in this, and a lot of ice because I like them crunchy. I like my smoothies crunchy. You know, next weekend is Memorial Day, and the only thing that would make a Memorial Day picnic or a day at the beach even better is smoothies all around. And the BlendJet 2 is so portable, you can take it anywhere. So right now, you can take advantage of our offer. BlendJet is the sponsor of the program. If you go to blendjet.com and enter the promo code FEEDME12, you'll get 12% off your order and free 2-day shipping. And summertime with your own portable smoothie maker. What more could you ask for? BlendJet.com. Use the promo code FEEDME12 and enjoy. Yeah, they're all different styles to choose from too. And this new top that lets you so you don't have to take the lid off. I love it because I lose lids. All right. With that, we're done. Let me tell you a little bit what's coming up this week. Not a whole, I told you, the week is kind of sparse and we are concentrating on this fascist Florida man who tomorrow is going to announce that he's running for president. I think he's got a rude awakening in store because I think America sees what Ron DeSantis is. And they're not going to like it. I'm not looking forward to it. And that he's teaming up with Elmo on this, please. So one day this week, I'm hoping, fingers crossed, that either tomorrow or Friday, Boca Britt Summers will join us. I spoke with her earlier today. She's hanging in there. So if she's feeling up to it, she will come and join us in studio. She lives 10 minutes from here. Those who don't know, Boca's been battling prostate cancer and, she's had a rough go of it. So I'm hoping she's well enough to come join us one day this week. On Thursday, Howie Klein cannot be here. And I got an email today from Don Siegelman, former political prisoner, former governor of Alabama, who has a new op-ed that he wrote with another former governor of another state. It's in today's Washington Post, and it's about how they regret ever using the death penalty on a prisoner. It's about the death penalty. And this comes just after, in this legislative session, Ron DeSantis signed a bill into law that lowers the threshold to kill somebody. So the reason the Parkland shooter didn't get the death penalty is because nine of the 12 jurors voted for the death penalty. Three did not. And Florida law said it had to be unanimous that they would only put sorry, I'm looking at the chat room and I shouldn't do that when I'm talking to you. They'll only put someone to death if it's unanimous decision by the jury. And it was 9-3. Well, DeSantis signed a bill into law that makes only 8 out of 12 votes necessary to kill somebody. So not unanimous anymore. And by under that that requirement, under that heading, under that law, the Parkland shooter would be being killed. Now, if anybody deserves to die, it's him. But, you know, that's a topic for another day. Charlotte in the chat room said, women get prostate cancer. Boca is a trans woman. And trans women, unfortunately, get prostate cancer. So, you know, fingers crossed that Boca's doing well enough to join us this week. And Surfer Norm, again, Boca is a trans woman. So that's why she has prostate cancer. The male parts that are left over. All right. With that, we're done. Thank you for listening, everybody. Have a wonderful night. We'll do it again tomorrow. And oh boy, we get to celebrate or mourn. Maybe, I don't know. I have such mixed emotions. I just want Ron DeSantis and Donald Trump and all these idiots out of our lives. But, you know, I guess that will take work on our parts. So let's get at it. Okay. All right. I'll see you tomorrow, everyone. Thanks for listening. Bye.